Oh, very reflective music for a Monday morning. Hello, welcome. How are you all? I hope you had a beautiful weekend. And it was sort of up and down weather-wise, but there were parts of it that were absolutely gorgeous. And I hope you got to just exploit those times as much as possible. It was an absolutely beautiful stretch of weather there. And so I hope you had a good time. I hope you had a beautiful weekend. And if you were working, sorry. If you're off today, hey, great. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. However you come to us, we appreciate it. And thank you for being a part of the audience. Let me introduce you to our group and also introduce you to the email address, which can get you in so we can get your questions, panel@wamc.org, or your comments, or your suggestions, or your snarky comments.
You're inviting snark, Joe.
panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we would love to hear from you. Let me introduce the band to you this morning. We got a good one together, and we're very happy. The Ulster County Comptroller and the former president and CEO of the Community Foundation of the Hudson Valley, March Gallagher, is here. Hello, March. How are you?
Good morning. It was a beautiful weekend. I went to the Ellenville Blueberry Festival and bought blueberries and blueberry pie, and it was absolutely gorgeous.
I got a summer mixed berry pie at Garden Works in Salem. And oh my God, was it good.
No, I think my pie was better though, Joe. Okay, it had a crumble on top and it was very tart.
Mine didn't have a crumble, but my goodness, was it a great crust.
I'm a pie addict. My favorite cake is pie.
You and Toby Ziegler.
Okay, there
from
you go.
From the West Wing.
So I got pie, it was sunny, it's all good.
I went in and they had little pies. And Meg Sutherland, who runs the joint, said, my wife picked up a little pie and she said, oh, we'll get one of these. And Meg turns and she said, well, I have a bigger one, a normal size pie in the oven. And if you just give me 5 minutes, I'll bring that out to you. And Kelly said, well, I don't know if we need that much pie. And I said, oh, yes, we need that much pie. Absolutely do we need that much pie. We also welcome political consultant Libby Post. Hello, Libby.
Hi. Hi.
Libby recently had surgery. She's on the mend. She's back. She was with us last week in the studio. Mm-hmm. She's with us this week in studio. How you doing? You holding your own?
Yeah, I'm holding my own.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's, I love my physical therapist.
Yeah.
I love the practice. But PT does at times stand for physical torture. There's no two ways about it.
Physical terrorist. Yeah. I don't. Well, yeah. I mean, that's obviously they don't do that on purpose. But
no,
they try to.
And just as a public service announcement, if you're going to have anything replaced, like a joint replacement, you have to do the PT. Otherwise, it's not worth doing the surgery.
Yeah.
It's just
no,
that
no, that's true.
It's
no,
really,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ever since I had my accident with my knees, I've been in physical therapy ever since, and it's I love it.
No, this week they're going to start me on the leg press.
Yeah.
And then the regular recumbent bike. So I'm looking forward to
that.
Oh,
you're going to knock that out of the park.
Yeah, I the recumbent bike is really good for my knees too. So
yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're sitting back and you can
watch
TV.
Yeah, right.
It's
right.
Fun.
I watch, yeah. So that's exactly
I watch
answer
Flintstone
emails.
Reruns. It's great. You brought a guest with us. Emma Edwards is with you. She's your intern, but so much more. tell us about Emma.
Well, Emma is at Wellesley with Hillary Clinton. only sometimes, and she's
can belly up to the bar there.
Right. She wrote me a letter in April or May and said, I looked you up and I want to be you when I grow up. So I was like, okay, fine, you can come intern for me for the summer. That was really pretty.
That's pretty much it. I called and said, hey, Libby, can I work for you? She said,
sure,
why not?
Right, and she's been great. She's into the politics, so she's been doing all kinds of campaign work.
So where do you hail from?
I hail from Niskayuna.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So you have a local connection.
Yeah.
So did you know Libby prior to... or of Libby?
I knew of Libby because my mother is an avid Roundtable listener. So I've been listening to her since I was little.
See how this happens, folks? It's the circle of life. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Well, that's great. Excellent. Yeah. And so far, so good.
So far, so good. I've learned so much. Libby threw me right into the fire because we're doing the campaigns.
Yeah.
I learned more than I thought I ever would, yeah, which is good. It's been really awesome. I feel like I'm heading back to Wellesley knowing what I want to do with my future, probably. Thanks, Libby.
Oh, that is wonderful. And what is that? What is that?
I think very similar to what Libby does. I really am interested in that. I found that I really love the campaigning more than I anticipated. The lobbying's good, but like it's not in session, so it's like kind of slower. But
It's hard to believe you could have a better mentor.
That's how I say it.
Gee, thanks, Joe. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Well, I'm trying to butter you up because I don't have your password yet.
and I just emailed Sarah for it. So.
Yeah, I know. We're working on it. It's we don't use it, so we don't know.
I know. I could go out and get it.
But it's fine. Does Mike Six work? Mike Bowen. Does Mike Six work? Okay. So
do this?
No, I'm just gonna have so then we have one. We have one other guest in the studio, and then I promise you at some point we'll start the show.
And don't forget him.
I'll get him in a second.
Okay.
I got business with him.
Me too.
Lucas Pelletier is with us. Come on up, Lucas. Lucas is shadowing us today. Lucas is a student at Landmark College. Excuse me, Landmark College in Putney, Vermont.
Yes, sir.
And you you are on the college radio station. You are. What year are you in?
I'm going to be a senior in the fall this year.
Oh, congratulations. That'll be great.
Thank you, sir.
And are you, and you're from this region, Latham, originally?
Well, no, actually. Originally from Schenectady, but I moved up to Saratoga in 2013, and I've been living up there ever since.
Excellent. And, it's your mother's practices in Latham.
Yep.
Okay, that's where I got Latham from. And what do you want to do out of school?
Mainly get into radio.
Okay.
And maybe voice acting.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, we act on here all the time.
We're all acting.
We're all acting. That's right. Well, it's great to have you here. Please feel free, if any of you want to say anything or join in on the conversation. We'd love to have you. We have mics open, and we'll just belly up to the bar and go at it. But congratulations. Thanks so much for being here. It's a real pleasure to meet you.
It is a pleasure to meet you as well, sir.
Thank you.
So respectful.
I know.
I mean, it's a little, you gotta cut that.
Do I need to be nicer?
Yeah. Emma. Start with the sir stuff, okay?
Yeah. Let's not go there, shall we?
Jim Ketterer is here, and senior fellow at the Bard Center for Civic Engagement. And as I mentioned in the introduction, Jim has also, over the last couple of days on the show, we have had this incredible segment with a gentleman by the name of Robert Gassendi, who an ambassador who served as a diplomat in the U.S. Foreign Service from the early 60s to the late 90s. And Jim contacted me and said, this guy's amazing. We should get him on. And I said, okay, well, how about you interview him? You know him. And you did. And so we have been blessed with a 6-part series. We're into part 3 today. The first 2 parts have aired. If you've missed them, don't worry. You can go online at wamc.org/roundtable and find them there. But first of all, good morning.
Good morning. I'm certainly inspired by everybody else in this room. I'm not sure what I want to do with my future, but I think my immediate future probably has pie in it.
Yeah, that's right. And if you have trouble, just say I want to be like Libby.
Yeah.
And then you're doing this series with Ambassador Gassendi.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to be in the studio while you were recording these, and the man is amazing. I kept on saying it last week as I was introducing these segments that it's very Zelig-like because it seemed like whatever was happening in history, there he was.
Yeah, yeah. I worked for him for many years, and we traveled around the world together, and I heard many of his amazing stories, and just thought, you know, more people should hear these, not only because he's an interesting person, and he is, and he's a great storyteller, but it's really just an important slice of history, particularly the second half of the 20th century. You know, he served in Libya, in Somalia twice, and second time during Black Hawk Down when he was the president's special envoy there. He served in South Africa during apartheid, Russia during Yeltsin, Poland during the Cold War, and he worked with the person who would become John Paul II. Just an amazing person. And also, I think it's an interesting take on diplomacy. Most people just don't really realize what our diplomats around the world do on a regular basis. And he's done it. And he really tells a compelling story. So I hope that people listen in and enjoy it.
It's fascinating. It's so well done. You're very good at this. Of talking to him, of interviewing him, and obviously your friendship comes out. But it's really we're blessed to have this.
Maybe that's your future, Jim.
I thank you.
Yeah, yeah. That and pie.
That
and
pie. Yeah,
just way behind a microphone.
Documenting a life story like that.
It's,
you know, a professional life story is
really. Yes, it's very well done, and we thank you very much.
Thanks to WAMC for hosting it.
Does he like it? Has he listened to it?
Yeah, in fact, I saw him Friday evening, and we were discussing it. And you know, also a lot of his Foreign Service colleagues are listening in, and that's going to be shared with several of the important organizations that deal with international relations and U.S. foreign policy. So it's going to have legs.
Not for nothing. First of all, the nicest man. Just a sweet, wonderful, nice guy who seems very ready to tell these stories. Also, his wife seems like a pip.
Yeah, and as he says in the interviews multiple times, they did this together.
Yeah,
they did this experience
she's his
together.
Partner in crime. Yeah,
yeah. And they really are a dynamic duo.
Well, it's wonderful. And again, I thank you. We'll be hearing that at about 10:45 this morning. And if you haven't heard the first two segments, again, you can hear them online. But we'll be running those the rest of the series this week. And it's really something not to be missed. It's quite special and very informative. All right, let's talk about the world. And you thought you could get away from that, didn't you? Nope, not so. We are knee deep in an election, and we have a lot to talk about when it comes to that. So we will we'll get to that this morning. And again, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, let's go to there was a Maggie Haberman article in the New York Times over the weekend called Inside the Worst 3 Weeks of Donald Trump's 2024 campaign. And this basically goes into some details. I love this article for a couple of reasons. One is because it just gives you an idea. One, because it's by Maggie Haberman, who I think is just I believe her to be a good journalist, but just she's such a thorn in Trump's side that it's really that's fun to read. But two. That people around the former and would-be president see a candidate knocked off his bearings, disoriented by his new contest with Kamala Harris, and unsure of how to take her on. And then as the article continues, it talks about just how Trump gets on the phone with Maggie Haberman and is just seething by the fact that they keep talking about the crowd size and how his crowds are not as big as her crowds, and that's just driving him nuts to the point where, and this is not a part of an article, but this was something that he posted on Truth Social overnight, that the reason that her crowds appear to be so large is because she has employed AI, uh-huh. And it's all fake. There actually is no one there. It is just AI. So they have used artificial intelligence to put 12 to 15,000 people into an arena to see the current vice president and the vice presidential nominee. He says that it's fake. He said that they are cheating. And he said that this has to stop because he has the biggest crowds in the campaign. I'm sorry. It's hard not to make fun of that.
Well, you know, for him, it's always a size thing.
I know.
It is always a size thing. And this is the best version of his projecting yet. You know, I mean, that they're lying, that they're making things up, because that's all he ever does. And, you know, I think we should just go on the streets in the towns and the cities where they were at and ask people, were you there? Or ask people to raise their hands. Were you there? And
or to show their own photos. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean,
and show their own photos. I mean, people on Facebook, it was all over the place.
We have to take a break. But in fact, we'll take a break and we'll be right back. Okay. And we'll talk about this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Libby Post, Jim Ketterer, and March Gallagher. We welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org. And we'd love to hear from you. We are talking about the campaign. We're talking about there was an article in the New York Times called the Worst 3 Weeks of the Trump Campaign in 2024. And you just look at how tumultuous the last month and a half has been, and for a good part of that, right up until even into the Republican National Convention, things were in Trump world were going great, and then they weren't, and that is seems to be what he is what he is reacting to. There's one other aspect, and then I'll turn this over to our panelists. There's a lot of debate or discussion as to the this was brought up at the Trump news conference that was held at Mar-a-Lago, but one of the things that he kept bringing up was that Kamala Harris has not done a media interview. But also that she hasn't been seen. She hasn't been out there. Now, meanwhile, she spent the entire weekend doing events. Trump's only event was in Montana, which is not a battleground state. There is a tight Senate race.
Yes.
There, but there is not. This is not one of the biggies, And then we got into the whole crowd size nonsense, and that has continued in sort of where we are at the moment. And meanwhile, Democrats seem to be in this really weird place where I don't know how used to it they are, but March, they seem to be on offense.
It's going really well for the Democratic side of the ticket. I kind of feel a little bit bad for Trump. I hate to say that, but
oh,
I do.
Oh, you'll get over it.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm watching him flounder. You know, I'm not a Trump supporter by any means, but it is a radical change in what he has to take on during the campaign. And he reminds me, you know, I'm a mother of three. He reminds me of, you know, my children lashing out. I mean, he attacked Brian Kemp in Georgia, the very popular governor there. It makes absolutely no sense. He said, "I am what I am," when explaining to donors sort of why he's taking the tact he is, which is a Popeye quote, okay?
No. It's also La Caja Fall.
Okay, there you go. Right, exactly.
And I'd love to see him in feathers and a boa.
Yes.
Singing.
And then lastly,
eating spinach while that.
Yes.
The rallies that he is having have this like horrendous signage and placement where people are holding "you're fired" signs over his head. And then
it's
I saw
great.
One where they had a big banner that said Kamala Chaos, but the only word visible was the word Kamala. And I just think things are falling apart around him and he's lashing out. So it's been very, very tough on him. And on the Democratic side, it's just been sweeping. You look at the $300 million raised, while at the same time Trump is attacking Miriam Adams Adelson, who, you know, just donated $18 million in ads for three states for him. So he's attacking his own donors. He's, you know, calling him on himself to be fired. And
he's eating his young.
He's really burning is how it looks to me, crashing and burning. And,
but it just seems that we know enough about this man that he's trying to find his leg up, and usually he finds it, right?
Well, he did put out a video this weekend that you might have missed, Joe, but it was very important, where he accuses Kamala Harris of trying to take Christmas away from us, and that if elected this fall, he will make sure that Christmas will be in safe hands. That's one thing. Secondly, people might remember Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, who I think worked for Trump for 1 week.
Yes.
It was quite
and
a week.
He's turned 180 in his
Yeah,
riots.
He certainly has, but he knows Trump well, and he is predicting that Trump is going to drop out, that he just cannot take the onslaught of negative news and negative polling, and that he will find a way, as he always does, to blame it on everyone else, but will drop out. So
wow.
If you want to take the word from the Mooch, that's what he has to say.
I expect quiet quitting before I think he'll do real quitting.
Yeah, which in some ways might be what he's doing now.
Yeah, I mean, he can't stand the fact that he's not getting the news coverage, right? And it's like, I don't know if I said this last week or not, but what's going on? You had the Republican convention, they had their bump, and then all the news was stolen by Biden making his announcement, Harris saying yes, and then Tim Walz. It's very much like, but the opposite of when the Democrats had their convention in 2008, right? And then McCain announced Sarah Palin. And so the Democrats lost all their news bump, and it all went to Sarah Palin, and we all saw how well that worked for them in the long run. But he's just unhinged right now because he's not getting the media coverage, because his crowds are smaller, because his hands are small, and everything else is just shriveling up for him. So, you know, if he does quit, then the question is, where does that leave the Republican Party, which he really doesn't care?
Yeah. I mean,
he
I don't know
care.
How. Yeah. I just mentioned that somebody from the former inner circle
right.
was saying
but then,
this.
But then who ends up being the nominee? J.D. Vance. That would be really fun to watch because he's imploding
as well. It's going
well
for him
yes,
so far,
it's
yeah.
really going well. So, you know, I just think that Trump is showing his age now compared to Biden and his bad debate.
Right, he looked good then,
right.
but
Trump
now
looked
he doesn't
good now.
Look good.
Now it's like it's really clear.
If I had to predict one of the candidates sort of doing something in the next few weeks that would really trash their opportunity to win, my money is on Trump doing
it,
and not
absolutely.
Kamala. I think there are going to be bumps in the road. I think after the convention for the Democrats, we're going to see some softening in her appeal to people. You know, people will have more time to bring out some of her policies that they may not agree with. We have to see how she continues to deal with the issue in Gaza. But I think if somebody's going to do something unhinged that's going to tank the race and live on in infamy, it's probably going to be Trump.
Absolutely.
I don't feel bad going against the political stylings of Anthony Scaramucci, but I just don't think there's any way in hell that this guy is going to drop out of the race. The ego is too big. The intention is too big. I mean, you lose by however 200,000 votes, and you still think that you won. He's not leaving. That's why would you do that?
Well, you ought to get the Mooch on air and ask him directly.
No, I'm not going after you. Obviously,
I know.
I'm just thinking that. I just think that's I don't know.
It's also a way of Scaramucci getting back in the news. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Right.
I
mean,
yeah.
Come on.
I just helped.
Yeah.
Hey, look,
right.
A lot of us were saying Biden would never drop out. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just think we have to be ready for all things. What I find shocking is that the attempted assassination is not carrying more weight. To me, I thought that was going to dominate the news cycle for the rest of the campaign, is that image of Trump with his fist raised in the air. And I thought that was going to be what we were seeing. And I think, you know, Harris has just wiped that away. It's not even coming up right now as a major image in the campaign.
But one thing I think on a more serious note that incident ought to do and ought not to fade away is particularly because this is such a crazy year, because it seems to be a redo of 1968 in so many ways, we should not lose sight of the possibility of political violence throughout this year, and that it's already such a polarized and inflamed situation. And, you know, that there have been people who have been arrested subsequent to that attack who were apparently coming into the country to carry out such attacks, that this is deeply concerning. And so I hope we don't lose sight of it in the noise of everything else.
Well, what we need to make sure is that next week in Chicago is not like 1968 in Chicago. Okay.
Yeah, as a beginning.
Right, which was a lot of violence and a splintering of the party, which ushered in Nixon's presidency. And so, you know, we need to make sure that that doesn't happen. I have a feeling that you will have, quote unquote, however they're going to, you know, term themselves, agitators from the right coming in with long hair and whatever and looking like, you know, they're really from the left to foment some violence. And we have to be very vigilant, and the police have to be very vigilant to make sure that none of that starts. But we need to also understand that it's probably not our people. It's probably the other side doing their thing, because they've done it before.
I don't know, Libby. I was watching a little video a friend of mine who's a real social activist put out, and she was saying, you know, this is our only opportunity to make our stand on this major issue of Gaza, and we need to pull out all the stops and do everything we can. So I think there are people on the left who are very concerned about the military-industrial economy that we have, and they're going to push as hard as they can.
And that's
right
really
now
stupid right now.
They
I'm
feel
sorry.
Like this is their only chance.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree with you.
It's
I think
really
we're at risk
stupid.
For what happened in electing Nixon. And I also want to say, to me, that's a different level of political violence where you have people in the street, protesters clashing with each other. That is different than having somebody on a roof with an AR-15, especially after the candidate, by the way, has been hacked by Iranians. I mean, to me, it's just absolutely outrageous that we didn't have better security.
If
there.
That actually happened.
Which one?
The hack.
The hack.
Well, we'll talk.
Interesting.
We'll bring that up. We'll talk about the hacking in just a moment. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at wamc.org, panel at wamc.org. March Gallagher, Jim Ketterer, and Libby Post on this Monday morning, the 12th of August. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Monday morning. A lot going on, and we have a wonderful group to discuss it. Panel at WAMC.org. If you would like to continue the conversation with us, panel at WAMC.org. This letter from Jay. Trump, his coming up with this idea of AI crowds is absolute testimony for his crooked criminal way of thinking, dishonest and untruthful. Who would take this seriously? It's pathetic. Well, there will be people who will take it seriously. I did think I do dislike when people do this, but I'm going to do it just for a second. Because it seems rather constant in the lead up to Joe Biden stepping down. But if Joe Biden were to say that the picture of Trump's crowd was AI generated, good God, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and for Trump to say that, it's sort of another day at the office.
Right.
We
right.
have different standards for the candidates, and we have a specific standard for Trump, which is no bar too low. We've already accepted that he is a tyrant and that he wants to be a dictator and that he is a crook. And a lot of these characteristics were known before he ever set foot in running for office. We have a different standard for the man.
And that different standard is, if it were Biden, we would be talking about his mental acuity.
Right.
If it were Kamala Harris, we would say the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, any other person. Right? And
right.
and in this case, it's just Trump being Trump.
That's right. Boys will be boys.
I'm sorry. Did you want to say something? Okay. Kenneth said, let's face it, Trump is delusional and more he is out there, the better. There is that philosophy, although I remember people saying that in 2016 as well, is give him every microphone, give him every outlet. And
he'll shoot himself in the
foot.
That would only be true if we didn't have the second standard. We have a different standard, so it doesn't work.
Well, and it would, and we can't ignore the fact that his rhetoric unleashed the ugly underbelly of America, which wasn't voting before. Those were the people who stayed home because they didn't think their vote counted. Then they went in 2016 and, ooh, my vote counted. So now they're a little more engaged.
Yeah, and 2016, it seems to me, really changed the name of the game in presidential politics. And so I still hear people talking about the undecideds and the swing voters. There aren't any. There's a few people that the New York Times can find in a diner somewhere in Ohio. They just don't exist. The whole name of the game now is exactly what you just said, Libby, energizing the people who are on your side and making sure they're going to vote. That was the concern about Biden, is that he was de-energizing. That's not a word, but that he was going to suppress the turnout on his side. Not that they were going to vote for Trump. They just
weren't going to vote.
And so that's exactly it. And that has been the power of Trump so far, that he has been able to turn out and get people to vote who didn't vote before.
And now we've seen the power of Harris about getting people energized and out. Black churches, people of color,
young
women,
people.
Young people, voter registration is up, you know, Taylor Swift.
They weren't going to vote for Trump, but
Beyonce
they might not
will
vote.
Do her thing, and it'll be it'll be very, very difficult for Trump to overcome that wave.
They were going to stay home. I mean,
I
want to say, you know, the mood at my dining room table was a radical change, you know, with my kids who were 19 and 21, between the night before Biden announced and the night after. And while they'll vote because their mother's an elected official and they probably, you know, have been voting since they were 18, or they have been voting since they were 18, I think their friends were not going to come out at all. And that was really clear. They did not feel enthused or, heaven forbid, they were going to vote for RFK because they saw him weightlifting. Yeah.
Now probably they won't have the chance because he's probably not going to be on the
ballot. I think the bear episode convinced a few of them.
Yeah. That was...
The bear story was just unbelievable. And the memes that came with it.
I think he was gambling that he could ride a wave just like Trump in being as ridiculous as possible. And I think the electorate just isn't having it. That standard that we've applied to Trump really doesn't apply to everybody else. Mm-hmm.
Some days you get the bear and some days the bear gets you.
That's right. Absolutely, Jim. All right. This letter from Jeff: I don't see Trump quitting without a global deal to drop all the legal cases against him. And what would have great appeal to, and that would have great appeal to Trump at this point. All right. We talked about this briefly. I just want to bring it up again. We didn't really get into it, but that was the hacking question and of what is going on there. And this is the Trump campaign says the hack could indicate wider election disruptions. The campaign is the one that's saying that it was hacked. At least two prominent lawmakers are asking for more information from intelligence officials about whether Trump was targeted by foreign hackers. Analysts and intelligence experts warned Sunday that wider efforts may be underway by foreign powers to disrupt the U.S. presidential election after the Trump campaign said it believed its email systems had been breached by hackers working for Iran. So far, two Democratic House members who have served on intelligence and security committees have called for briefings and for declassification of information related to the possible foreign interference in the election. The Trump campaign announcement came after it received questions from news organizations about an internal vetting document on Vice President candidate J.D. Vance that had been sent to the news outlets. The Washington Post on Thursday was sent a 271-page document marked as privileged and confidential from an anonymous AOL user going by the name Robert. Politico was the first to report on the Trump campaign statement, said that It had been receiving documents, including a vetting document on Vance from a sender also going by the name Robert, since July 22nd. My apologies. Analysts are now looking at that and trying to figure out exactly where it came from. And the Trump campaign has pointed to a report released Friday by Microsoft in which the company said it had discovered evidence that Iranian hackers had tried to break into the email account of a high-ranking official on a U.S. presidential campaign in June, which was around the same time Vance was selected as Donald Trump's running mate. Jim, do you know offhand, and I was trying to find a link to this, and a physical link to this, of around the time, shortly after the assassination attempt of former President Trump, there was a question as to his safety and that the Secret Service had been put in had been put on watch, that there was an attempt to go after Trump. Is this all anyway linked?
I don't know if it's specifically linked. First thing I just want to say is that maybe the most shocking part of that story that you read, Joe, was that someone still has an AOL account.
Right. I agree with you there.
That, anyway, aside from that.
They still work.
They still work, apparently, according to, I mean, Robert's got an account. I don't know one way or the other if there's a specific link, but we can see that our adversaries in the world have rightly identified our elections as a moment of kind of great potential chaos and weakness in a way that if you go back many, if you go back just a decade, maybe more, you know, the elections were important. There was a lot of activity around them, but the administration of the elections was just kind of seen as kind of boring administration, ho-hum, and people generally had confidence in those institutions that were administering our elections. And now because there's been such an active campaign and a relentless effort, particularly on the side of Trump, to diminish that confidence in those elections, that our adversaries are saying there's a great weakness here and we ought to exploit it. And so, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that some email accounts have been hacked. That's just going to be kind of the cost of doing business on anything
these
days.
Well, that happened in 2016.
Right.
Remember
and,
Hillary's
and
stuff.
I think it's going to continue to happen. We'll see all kinds. And who's hacking, who's leaking, who's doing what. But Joe, as you rightly put together the broader context of generalized threats, people being arrested because they're arriving in the country with apparently a plan to carry out some attacks, and then hacking, and all of this, I think that this is really a serious concern. And this is the kind of thing that will not only go on through to November, but it's the sort of thing that I think is also just going to spur all kinds of debate about the legitimacy of the elections after they've taken place. And so we're going to be dealing with this kind of chaos that our adversaries are purposely trying to sow in any way that they can, for many months after the election, as well as in the run-up to the election.
Well, and it's a full-time job, and it continues 12 months a year and 4 years of a term. I don't think we're going to see any change. It's continuing. I was very taken aback that we're learning about this from the Trump campaign and from the Microsoft Threat Analysis Center. Like, why is this company the leading edge on what I consider to be a huge national security issue? That kind of upset me. And I actually went and I read the document. And, you know, first of all, whoever chooses the names for these actors and these programs of hacking is ridiculous. This one was Mint Sandstorm. But I also read in the same document, which is only about 4 pages long, this Microsoft document, that Peach Sandstorm was an IRGC-related compromised user account with minimal access who hacked into a county-level government in a swing state. And that freaked me out because I work in county government and I'm charged with looking at the risks. And honestly, like, Iranians hacking into our Board of Elections was not on my list. not on my list.
Do you have a Robert that works there? Now, Libby, you bring up an interesting point, or brought up an interesting point earlier, that you question the validity of.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, once again, Trump needs to have attention paid to him. So what better way to get attention paid to him than to say his campaign was hacked? You know, let's see the document. Let's see the reality of it. I mean, you know, Microsoft is saying, yeah, Iran did, but they're not saying they did Trump. They're just saying, yes, they did.
A presidential.
Right.
They say a lot of other things, too, in that memo. They talk about people bringing on, you know, fake personas and driving the social media content of, say, the protests on student campuses. Right.
And
so it wasn't just Trump's campaign.
Right. And that's, you know, that's typical Russian, you know, stuff that they did. That they've done that for a very long time, and now Iran's getting into it. But from a geopolitical perspective, hacking Trump and helping Harris get elected is not helpful for Iran. That's the thing. That's what doesn't make sense here.
That's true. Okay? I mean, extent to which they're trying to get a certain outcome.
Right. Right.
But so I think one outcome is just sowing chaos.
Well, there is
in
that,
general.
But that's more Putin, I would think, unless the Iranians have really taken a step up. But
I think they might be becoming more coordinated than they have in the past.
Well,
the concerning
thing is that what's the ultimate outcome here? You know, they'll be better off with Trump in the White House than with Harris in the White House.
All right. I think we all just need to take a break. So we'll do that, and we'll be back in just a moment. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll return after news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion for this morning. March Gallagher, Jim Ketterer, and Libby Posts. We welcome you, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. I want to get to some other topics. However, let me just go through the letters. We have some letters chosen that I want to read as well. James says, we're excited about Kamala, but we still have to see and hear her in a debate against Trump. Remember, we were equally excited about Biden, and then the debate happened.
Who was equally excited?
I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
Not equally excited.
That was, I think we were all like, oh, God.
We were equally hopeful.
I remember Kamala in the vice presidential debate stopping Pence and saying, I'm speaking now.
Right. Right.
And is that a fly in your head? Kamala was not all that impressive during the Democratic primary debates 4 years ago. Trump has a way of taking over the stage in real time. Let's hope Kamala manages to keep her cool.
She has 4 years as vice president training behind her now. And she's a prosecutor, and she will be on stage with one person, not with how many were there, 6 to 8. So it'll be a different ballgame.
M says, is there any truth to what I'm hearing about election officials not certifying election results if the results go against Trump? Is anything being done to secure the voting process and results?
That is concerning. And I think, you know, when you hear Trump calling out specific electors, which he did, I think it was this in the state of Georgia, actually. We were talking about Georgia on the break, but I think that's where he was calling them out by name. Mm-hmm. That is really concerning. It feels like he's already sort of setting up to, you know, have shenanigans happen on his behalf. I read, and I really would like to do more research on this, that 95% of ballots actually are supported by a paper ballot. I know we went to these new machines in my county, and there is a paper ballot that you're filling out. So hopefully at the end of the day, we can get down to the paper if we have to.
Well, that's where in 2020.
No, just
In 2020, when they were making all this hoopla about, oh, I couldn't have lost, they went to the paper ballots. They had to go back to those and do hand counts. And, oh, I'm sorry, but you did lose.
But we shouldn't be surprised now, in August of 2024, that this is a concern. We knew this was going to be a concern. This is a huge concern. You can almost 100% guarantee that there are going to be these questions county by county in various states, and in certain states where the certification process is going to be highly in question. Having paper ballots is going to be somewhat helpful, but that the vote count and the ballot count aside, irrespective of that, there are going to be places that have they've put in highly partisan election administrators. They've taken it over at the local level. And I know that Congress passed, I think it's called the Electoral Count Reform Act, and that's supposed to strengthen it. But really, you know, the on the federal level and from Washington, that's one thing. But our presidential elections are run by the states, and they're administered by counties. And that's where the action is going to happen. And I think it's going to be highly chaotic, and it's going to go on for many, many weeks after Election Day.
I hope Harris blows it out of the water so that it isn't as much of a question, because I do think you're right, Jim, and I think that's going to be the time we're most at risk for political violence.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I agree. I mean, but Biden blew it out of the water, and it still didn't really matter.
Yeah, the facts aren't necessarily that relevant.
Did he blow it out of the water? What was the Electoral College count? I don't know. I can't remember, but it didn't feel
like
he blew
it out of the water.
306 or 308.
But, I mean, in the real, as far as the count
goes. Yeah, the count.
I mean, it got down to whatever votes
it was.
Hillary
won the popular vote. She just lost the Electoral College.
And this was something that, and I'm skipping ahead here, but this was something that was a question that was asked of President Biden yesterday on CBS Sunday Morning by Robert Costa, who said, you know, you're getting out. And he said, because I feel the threat to democracy. And he said, do you feel that this actually can happen? And he said, if Kamala Harris wins, we're in trouble.
He said that.
He didn't exactly say that. He said if Trump wins. First he said if Trump wins, and then he corrected himself, and he said if Trump loses, that we're at risk of violence.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's right to raise the red flag here. I think people need to be very aware, and people need to be on high alert. I'm not really sure what you do at the local level or nationally or, you know, state-wise to protect against it. That's
well,
not clear.
I mean, he's right to raise it. It's late to raise it. So hopefully the government has been at work on plans. Number one, I think, you know, bracing for violence, for serious violence. And also, you know, I saw J.D. Vance at a rally a few days ago, and he—
Still not over it?
Yeah. he was not only— he was hosted by the local police force. They weren't just there. He was holding this rally at their station. They were hosting him and essentially endorsing him.
Which is
and so let me just say, like, if this were any other country where I were working and working on elections or democratization project, and this kind of, you know, politicization of people who have guns and badges at the local level, this is extremely dangerous. And so I certainly hope that the Biden administration is planning for all of these possibilities, because it's a real possibility. I would also say this, what I'm about to say isn't going to solve the problem, but it's part of what should be happening. The U.S. is a member state of an international organization called the Organization for the Security and Cooperation in Europe. Doesn't sound like something we'd be a member of based on the name, but we are. And one of the things they do is send election observation teams to all of the various member states. There's 56 or 57 member states. There is a group of observers who will be coming here in November. And the good thing about these observers is that they're not partisan. In this case, they won't even be Americans. They are trained, and they come before. They do an analysis of the situation before Election Day. They stay during Election Day. They stay for the count, and they stay after Election Day. And they don't have any kind of legal enforcement capacity, but they have the capacity to cast sunshine on what might be going wrong. And I think they're probably sending a relatively small group of observers. I think one thing the Biden administration ought to do is ask the OSCE to send a very large group and to make sure that they have full access in every state, which they haven't in the past. Some of the mm-hmm. states have prohibited them, and at every county level. That's one of the many things that the administration ought to be doing to brace for impact.
People need to be ready and also checking their registration status. I think this is less of an issue in New York State, but in other states we're seeing tremendous purges, and people have to check and re-register. So hopefully that word is getting out.
And the other thing is that it's illegal for the cops to do what they did.
Yeah,
but they
in
did
uniform.
It.
It's a partisan use of taxpayer dollars, which is illegal. Not that it doesn't happen, but just to say it is illegal.
And we can assume that it'll happen.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, at least, you know, at least in New York, when the cops do their thing, you know, they don't do it in front of the station. they at least go to do some rally somewhere with it. And they're really not supposed to wear their uniforms. It's very clear that they're not supposed to do it, but some of them do it anyway.
That's been my experience at the local level as an elected person and as a politician, is that police officers routinely do not want to appear in uniform, mm-hmm. and they will step back out of a photo or chastise, you know, the photographer. Yeah, because they know that they're not supposed to be appearing in uniform. It looks like an endorsement, but I think that's a real risk, and it's beyond a risk. It's actualized, right?
And just to be clear, I mean, my concern is, you know, the legalities of it and the optics of it. In the midst of an election. My deeper concern is, does this say something about the political leanings of local and county level police forces that could be drawn upon post-election in the midst of chaos? And in other countries, you see this. We are not exempt from these kinds of problems.
The one thing going in our favor is that the president, who's a Democrat, is the commander-in-chief of the Army. And if there were rogue police departments going out to do that, to impact the outcome of the election, to foment violence in the streets, I think you would see the National Guard being brought out to stop it.
Which is at the governor level, right? Not the national level. I
mean,
I think
although
we've really...
the president can nationalize.
We've really alienated law enforcement in this country. I think it's been an incredibly challenging time over the last 4 years to be in law enforcement. You know, you saw during the Black Lives Matter stuff, people in law enforcement trying to embrace a different view of, you know, the relationship between people of color and law enforcement in the country. And you see similar things happening with regard to the pro-Gaza protests that have happened on campus, where you see law enforcement coming in and, you know, most of the time, you know, under orders to create peace or subdue protests. And it's really created this division, I feel, between the Democratic Party and law enforcement, and I hope that that can be healed, because I think it's really damaging, and it doesn't really speak to every individual in law enforcement, just in general, the sentiment. Yeah.
John writes to us, polling is trending toward Harris, but there is a lot of hesitation about her surging to continue. I don't know what could happen to change that momentum. The convention coming up and the debates should boost Harris and Walz even more. And we are seeing those numbers change. But even as we were talking at the very beginning of the show of how great things were looking for the Harris-Walz campaign and less so for Trump, Trump is still leading in 4 of the 7 battleground states. It's a statistical dead heat, sort of all the way around, but it's far from comforting for anyone, for either side.
Well, hopefully he continues to not campaign in those states and mm-hmm. go to places like Montana.
But it, again, important to realize that, I mean, we've seen incredible number changes in the last 2 weeks. I don't know, Libby, do you think we're going to get to a point where they solidify a bit?
Yeah, I think, you know, once we get after Labor Day into late September, early October, is when you're going to start seeing the reality of all of this. And if Trump keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to keep going. His approval rating will continue to dip. But, you know, it's about the swing states. We know New York's going to go blue, California. We know the states that are going to go blue. It always comes down to Michigan, you know, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, you know. I don't know if the people in Ohio are embarrassed by J.D. Vance or not, you know, and whether they'll go a different way. I mean, Mike DeWine, the governor there, while he is a Republican, he's more of a Rockefeller Republican.
Yeah, he's a centrist, really.
You know, right. And he's not putting up with a lot of the crap that Trump is selling. And I don't think he supports him, really. And so we'll see what happens. But we have to just keep our eye on the prize. And we have to, the Democratic Party and the people who do not want Trump elected have to understand that political violence and disrupting the convention next week is not going to work in our favor. And I get that they might think that this is their last hurrah, which isn't true. There's never the last hurrah. There's always, that's what democracy is. There's always another shot. And so be forward thinking and recognize we need to make sure that Trump is not elected. And what does that mean? And put your own stuff on the back burner for a little while.
I think a lot of it is going to come down to the economy. I mean, when we saw the stock market crash recently, it really raised concerns for me about whether Harris is going to be, you know, addled by a lagging economy. And I think economy is a huge, huge issue. Those people who are sort of wavering, who are Trump supporters, that's what they're being driven by. And we really haven't heard what the Harris platform is. She did just say that, you know, she wants to also support doing away with taxing tips.
Yep.
I thought it was very funny, actually, when Trump came out with that, because didn't we just have a Supreme Court ruling that said that you can give former elected officials gratuities, so mm-hmm. those wouldn't be taxed under this? I have no idea. I'm joking. But I do think Harris has got to come out with a very strong set of planks in her platform that speak to, you know, lower and middle class Americans and how it's going to improve and better our lives, right? That's the piece that people are missing. And if, you know, those people that are supporting Trump because they think he's going to bring a better economy actually can hear and see real tangible policy initiatives from the Harris campaign on economy, they could be won over. But she's got to do that.
Yeah, and she will. But the thing is this, the majority of people aren't paying attention to any of this right now.
True.
Right? It's everyone's on vacation. Nobody's like, I mean, not nobody, but those of us who pay attention to this, we pay attention to it all the time. The majority of voters, late September, early October, they'll start dialing in. It wasn't, last Monday was not a crash. The market didn't crash. There was an adjustment. You know, I read, I think it was Robert Reich's or Paul Krugman's article about how this happens.
Right.
And
it's
then
normal.
We bounced right back, you know? So people need to like just
breathe.
Get a grip and not go crazy. I never look at my stuff, ever.
But
once a year, I meet with my advisor, and they say, you're doing good. And I'm like, great. Because to look at it every day would drive you absolutely insane.
But a lot of people do, and economists are fond of saying that there's a big difference between Wall Street and Main Street,
sure.
That Wall Street is not the economy. However, over the last few decades, so many people have ended up with their pensions on Wall Street, even if it's not, you know, determining a determinative percentage of the stock market. It has a real political effect because there are fewer and fewer people who have the old style of pension where there's a
right.
guaranteed payout.
Sure, nobody
but,
does anymore.
So for people who have any amount of money in their pensions that is in some way or another affected by the rise and fall of Wall Street, they are paying attention in a different way. It feels very personal, and it is very personal for them. And the political blowback is real, I think. And it's just the reality of the way that people's pensions are invested now.
Well, there's a new Financial Times Michigan Ross poll that puts Harris 1 point ahead on handling the economy than Trump. And so we'll start to see that grow. She will have her economic policy stuff come out. It will happen.
Trump was so volatile that he really was not a safe place for business. And I don't think, you know, most of Wall Street and the business community felt comfortable with the Trump administration, even though there were policies that were really supported. And he was clearly, you know, anti-regulation and a few other things, anti-taxation, lower the tax rate. But the volatility of that is not good for business, right? You want a predictable future that you can bank on, where you can make plans, and you don't want these sort of like crazy announcements every Friday night. Remember that in the beginning of the Trump administration? Every Friday night, there would be like some crazy news cycle. It's really not the best thing for the opening bell on Monday morning. So I hope that there's, you know, a broader community that feels that way, and that it works on both Wall Street and Main Street. But hopefully Harris will articulate that vision, because I don't see it right now.
All right. A couple letters. John, I'm a retired cop from another state. And during my years and during a mayoral election, the chief told us he wanted a lawn sign supporting the mayor on each cop's front lawn. We did. We all bought signs of all the candidates and placed them on our lawns, including the mayor's, in the back.
Yeah, you can't do that. You just can't.
Then we go to this letter from Lloyd. The police deserves all the negativity they have earned. Please, as long as the police serve themselves and protect each other, no sane person can support them. Seems a little broad.
I'm sorry, but when you want the cops to be there because somebody's breaking into your house, or you want 911 there because there's an emergency, you'll value them. You know, I mean, we can't just do this blanket, all cops are bad. You just can't, because it's about public safety. It's about making sure that our kids can walk home from school safely. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Tom writes, the message for the Gaza protests is simple. Harris called for a ceasefire early on. All she has to say is, if you want to end an end to the conflict, elect someone who will do something about it. That from Tom. Then there is Norman putting Donald Trump in charge of the money supply. This is Trump's suggestion that he should have some input in the Fed, as he has suggested would be putting the fox in charge of the hen house.
Yeah, I think that is putting the fox in charge of the hen house. And I heard J.D. Vance kind of waffling on this point, you know, about how elected officials should have more input. I think it's very, very dangerous. You know, an independent Fed has a lot of value, and we should not give that up.
Yeah, irrespective of who the president is, they should not have any more control of that than they already do, and the appointment power.
I wonder what Project 2025 says about the Fed.
I bet we could do a search.
Yeah,
Control F.
Probably yes. Track. Then we go to Peggy, who says, listen to Donald Trump. Paraphrasing what he has said, I don't need your votes. We've got it fixed. You won't have to vote again in 4 years ever again. Mm-hmm. That was before a Christian coalition, I believe. And we have to protect against them cheating bigly is what Peggy has to say about that.
He did backpedal a little bit from that comment later. And I think he also had, you know, supporters saying, well, that's not what he meant. He didn't mean that we would be in a dictatorship. He meant, you know, we would improve the country so much that it wouldn't be as critical as this election. But, you know, that was a really scary comment. Was that pre-Biden dropping out? I can't recall. Okay.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay. It was around that time.
But it was before he dropped out, because he got a lot of press on it. And then Biden dropped out and all the press went away.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and finish up right after this. Now what do we watch? The Paris Olympics ended much as they began, with a raucous spectacle before a joyous crowd, a generous supply of strobe lights, smoke, and fireworks, and then actor Tom Cruise rappelled off the stadium roof to collect the Olympic flag from the gymnast Simone Biles and carry it off on his motorcycle a la Top Gun and Mission Impossible to the city of Los Angeles, where the next Summer Olympics is set to take place in 2028. Paris, uncharacteristically giddy, is what the New York Times is saying in their headline, bidding au revoir to the Olympics. Joyous games brought cheer to Parisians as they handed off the Summer Olympics, to Los Angeles. Many big moments, obviously, that happened over the 17-day escape. I don't know about you. I know more about Snoop Dogg than I ever thought I would. But
and now you're going to know more because he's going to be on The Voice.
He's going to be on everything. Yeah, just everything. And and good to see Martha Stewart.
Well, they're helping him with his horse fears.
Yeah, and it's just it was great stuff. Jimmy Fallon doing the closing ceremonies last night, replacing Peyton Manning and Kelly Clarkson, who were so praised by for their fine work. and I want to get to one particular I think the story was a rather sour note to end on, is the stripping of a bronze medalist of their medal. And we'll get into that in a second, but just overall thoughts on the Olympics and the importance of them on the world stage, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I breathe a sigh of relief that we got through the games. There were no major incidents, no major attacks, anything like that. And, you know, it really seemed to be a feel-good moment in many different ways and lots of great competition, which is really why you have these games and some surprise winners, and not all by the U.S. You know, you had the sprinter from St. Lucia, the woman who she won a gold medal, the first gold medal in anything, yes. I think, for the country. And seeing those scenes from the people watching the race from there, they were just great. You know,
and
so many of those
stadium.
Scenes.
That's cool. Like in some of those Caribbean countries where they'll just get a stadium. Named after them.
Oh yeah,
because of this incredible feat that they have achieved. The team from Botswana, my goodness, it's stunning.
And you know, I think it was really very, very well done. I mean, I still wonder about the inclusion of breakdancing.
Well,
in the Olympics.
Did you watch the breakdancing?
I watched the Australian breakdancer.
Okay, you got to watch some more.
Okay,
it gets better.
I'll watch some more. It does? Okay.
The men's breakdancing, I watched it last night. Incredible. It's all actually, right. I was surprised.
I'm going to be open-minded about it.
Am I right? I thought I heard something that was not going to be a part of the LA Olympics.
No,
so, yeah.
It's not. It's not
so,
for whatever reason.
Well, that doesn't seem right.
I have to say that it was a great distraction for me after surgery to be able to, especially when I would wake up at 3 a.m. and go into the den because I couldn't sleep. And so, you know, there was always something on because of the 6-hour time difference. But a number of years ago, I worked in Montreal for what was called the Out Games, which was a LGBT sort of same kind of thing, right? And I'm not a jock, and I was just so astounded by how sport brings people together and the camaraderie and the ability for people to get over their differences and just do. And that's what the Olympics is really about, is our ability to get over our political differences and compete, but then support one another. I think what's going on right now with Jordan Chiles and the woman from Romania and, you know, whoever's going to get this bronze. I mean, it's really devastating for Jordan Chiles if she's stripped of it, and it still remains to be seen. But the notion that, you know, at that medal ceremony, when two women of color you know, the two American women of color sort of bow down to Rebecca Andrade, who is also a woman of color, three women of color in that gymnastics thing. It was just, it was great. And it speaks to the power of diversity, right, in sport and in our lives. And the amount of people of color in this Olympics winning gold, winning silver, winning bronze really just speaks volumes to the fact that we just need to get over ourselves and really just welcome the diversity that is our country and is our world.
But I was very disheartened to see in the reporting on the Childs medal controversy, also included in those articles was how much how much vitriol that she and others have been been facing online. I just have to say, if you're out there and you're posting things anonymously and you don't have the courage to use your name, you're just a coward.
That's exactly right.
There's something profoundly wrong with you. You are a coward, and it's just, you know, that's the flip side to what you're rightly saying, Libby, that there are still people out there who do not embrace the diversity and see it as somehow threatening to them and have chosen to anonymously write some of the most vile things imaginable.
The cowardice of anonymity is just astounding.
The sportsmanship that I think we see in the Olympics, you know, both on the teams of all the same country, you know, team members of the same countries, and then also across country lines, is really something that we need to take into the political arena. We should be able to bow down to and support our colleagues and our opponents with respect and appreciation the way that we do in sports. And I agree with you, Libby. I went to an NCAA basketball set of shows at here at the MVP Center because my nephew is playing for a team. And I was overwhelmed with the crowd, how peaceful and loving and intergenerational it was. And I realized, you know, sports really is a model for how we should do things. It's really a great model.
Yeah, it used to not be. But, I mean, you know, Jackie Robinson, that whole era. But now it's a whole different ballgame. And all these black women running and winning and doing everything really, really well, it just flies in the face of Donald Trump. I mean, it really does.
I just, and I know this isn't fair, but I don't care, which is that Jordan Childs was stripped of a bronze medal by four seconds.
It's just absurd. And now they've
appealing.
Now that they're appealing, because they said they did it within 47 seconds.
They have video evidence.
Right.
But 4 seconds. And I'm sorry, but U.S. gymnastics and the Olympic Committee was 18 years too late on Larry Nassar.
Yeah, right.
And what this monster did to U.S. and gymnastics in general. You know, I think, obviously, you get into, is there something wrong with giving two bronze medals?
Wasn't that the proposal from the Romanian side that they should all get
three.
The bronze?
There was three.
The three of them should get the bronze medal? That seems like a reasonable solution.
I mean, it seems reasonable given the kerfuffle, but it's unbelievable of sort of what is you know, what is accepted and then what is not accepted is pretty incredible to think.
Going back to what Jim was saying about the vitriol, you know, I just want to call out Amane, the boxer, the woman boxer, who really got so much flack. And I've been reading, you know, her life may be at risk in her home country now because of this online vitriol based on her having the XY chromosome and just how messed up that is. So, you know, I think I agree. People who are commenting anonymously or saying really horrible things really need to take a second look at themselves. Why are you doing that?
Well, and you think of somebody like Jordan Childs, who obviously this is very hurtful and awful, but had successful games. And look at what was achieved other than that. And her entire online profile just went down because she just said, I'm out.
And you understand that.
Understand
that makes
yeah.
perfect sense. Like, I'm just going to, you know, peace out.
That's a healthy reaction to an unhealthy situation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it really was wonderful to watch. And the basketball games yesterday and the day before were terrific.
I left last night. I went to go see a concert last night. I left the house, and the Olympic closing ceremonies were on. And I came back. Kelly was asleep, and Storage Wars was on.
One is definitely better than the other.
That's the problem.
That's the difference.
Yeah, that's the
Olympics
problem.
The Olympics are now over.
And America Gets Got Talent is going to take over NBC now.
Mm-hmm. Viewership was up 76% for these games over Tokyo, the last,
My thanks to everyone this morning. Ulster County Controller March Gallagher, Jim Ketterer, who will be with us in just a moment with his third interview with Robert Gassendi, and Libby Post. Thank you all so much. Thanks also to Emma Edwards. Congratulations. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be back right after this.